Why'd it have to be snakes? Welcome to the Movie Ladder Pod, discussing a movie that connects to the movie from the previous week's podcast. My name is Zach Brooks, and every week I'm joined here by...
Off Sinensky.
And Brendan Fitzpatrick.
And last week we talked about Citizen Kane. And this week, due to a mostly the ending scene connection, but I believe Brendan's sister had a better way to phrase it, we will be talking about Raiders of the Lost Ark, the very first Indiana Jones movie directed by Steven Spielberg.
One thing off the top. The name of the movie is Raiders of the Lost Ark, as Zach said. It is not Indiana Jones and the Raiders
of the Lost Ark. Right, it is not Indiana Jones and the Raiders.
There's no movie called Star Wars A New Hope. It is called Star Wars. There's no movie called Indiana Jones and the Raiders of the Lost Ark. It is called Raiders of the Lost Ark. Carry on.
Yes. Not according to Netflix. Netflix has Indiana Jones and the Raiders.
Well,
of the Lost
Netflix Ark. Is dumb.
It was rebranded after the fact, but
just like Star Wars was rebranded.
It's almost like Lucasfilm likes to tinker with things.
Yeah, you don't get to change the name of the movie to, you know, pursue a marketing strategy.
Yes, we are talking about the first Indiana Jones movie, which is titled Raiders of the Lost Ark. So we will be spoiling that movie. So if you have not yet watched that movie, which, what are you waiting for? It's
been what's wrong with you? Come on.
Been out for almost 40 years now.
Oh, my God. And now you just remember reminding me how old I am. Well,
yes, it's true.
Not the years, it's the mileage.
There you go. Getting all the quotes in early. We'll put the timestamp at the end of this in the description of this podcast, so you can jump ahead to when we start talking about our ladder. We're also going to do what we've been watching at the end of the podcast. We're going to try that for a little bit now, just kind of change things up. So we've done that sometimes, but we're just going to, this way we can just jump right into Indiana Jones and the Raiders of the Lost Ark. We figured we didn't want to have to make you guys wait for us to talk about that movie.
Yeah, why wait for the actual really good stuff? I mean, the title of the podcast is Movie Ladder Talks for Raiders of the Lost Ark. Let's give you the goods.
So, of course, if you have not seen the podcast, or if you've not seen the movie, find the timestamp, jump ahead to when we start talking about our ladder description, or our ladder. I'm all over the place right now.
It is on Netflix. It's perfect for sitting down on a Sunday afternoon when you have nothing else to do but kill 2 hours and, you know, watch it. It's really great.
And that's exactly what I did with my whole family yesterday.
Yeah, I think we all watched it on the same day, I believe.
Yeah.
And it's only 1 hour and 56 minutes. It is not like super long. It's not overstuffed. So
it's a brisk 2 hours. Yeah,
it goes by pretty quick. So but then, you know, if you do want to jump ahead to when we start talking about what next week's movie is and our listener suggestions, our host suggestions, just check that timestamp and you can jump ahead. And as always, you can submit your feedback, ratings, questions, comments to us at Ladder Movie on Letterboxd and Twitter, or themovieladder@gmail.com. So guys, before we get into it, I guess, how are you doing? How are things? How are things with you?
I'm doing well. Had a very lovely weekend. Nice Sunday at the pool. Nice time watching Raiders of the Lost Ark with the family. No complaints here.
That's good. Brendan, how about you? Are you staying cool in DC?
Yeah, staying pretty cool, even though I have been trying to go out every day and exercise and build up a sweat and, you know, come home every day reeking of sweat. Looking like Indiana Jones, peeling my shirt off my body as it's drenched. But pretty good. Yes.
Lovely. What a mental picture.
Yeah, I know, right? No, just picture me as like a 40-year-old Harrison Ford. It's exactly the same thing.
Yeah, such.
Because he is 40 years old in this movie. So
is he? You and him are the same age.
We'll get to it. Exactly. I am Indiana Jones. I'm exactly the same age. Same ruggish good looks. Same fedora. Same penchant for half open dress shirts, you know?
This is going to be a fun podcast because we have all seen Raiders of the Lost Ark before. I feel like I've probably seen it the least of the three of us, if I had to guess. This is probably like only my third time seeing this movie.
And this would make sense since you're the youngest of us.
Yeah. But
I've seen it a handful of times. I don't know if it's not like I've seen it 15 times or anything.
This wasn't one of the classics for me growing up.
I came to it a little bit late. Partially because I actually vividly remember I was upstate for the summer with my family. We used to go to like a summer like bungalow colony, before school for a few weeks. And I think like one night, like I couldn't sleep, but I like walked into like where my parents were watching TV or whatever, and they were watching Indiana Jones and The Last Crusade. And it was like 10 minutes left in the movie. And I guess I sat down to watch with them, And it was the scene where, you know, they both drink the glass and he chooses poorly. And the guy like turns into like a mummy or a zombie or whatever. And I had nightmares about that for like weeks. Like I couldn't sleep. Like every time I tried to sleep, I saw this guy like shriveling up. So like anytime anyone met, and I was probably like 8 years old at the time. So it's like, I hadn't heard of these movies. But like for like years, anytime someone mentioned Indiana Jones, I was like, oh, I can't see those movies. Those movies are too scary. So like I didn't see it until I was probably like 12 or 13 years old for the first time.
I have a similar story to that. I remember growing up, I was at my cousin's place and they were watching TV and I walked in and it was the Kali Ma scene.
Yeah.
And that was my first introduction to Indiana Jones. I had not seen any of the other Indiana Jones movies before that. And I didn't really understand what exactly they were watching. And I was very confused because I was a young child.
Yeah, they're mildly terrifying if you're a child just because of some of the imagery, like both of those scenes you guys are describing. And for me, I mean, this was probably the most dramatic scene I've ever seen, or probably one of the first dramatic scenes I ever saw as a kid, was the end of this movie. And, you know, I mean, these are movies for me, along with Star Wars and the Disney movies, that were on constant repeat for me and my three siblings growing up in the 80s. It was Indiana Jones and Star Wars. It was Disney and it was Looney Tunes cartoons. And this was like, you know, between this and Star Wars, it was always going back and forth, whether we were playing with lightsabers or going on a treasure hunt.
Playing with whips.
Yeah. I mean, we had this mound in the backyard that was surrounded by trees. And we used to always go up there and like dig for treasure, even though there was never anything there, of course. It was just a giant pile of dirt. But we treated it like we were digging for the Lost Ark. And it was, you know, that's one of the things that movies like this, when you grow up with them, really inspire you, is a movie like this really expands your imagination and helps you find fun things to do with your friends when you're a kid. You know, there's a huge, huge nostalgia factor as well. I've seen this movie probably close to 20 times. I've probably watched it every other year, if not more than once a year, since I've been alive. So, yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah, Dad figured you'd seen it the most. Yeah, we were definitely more of a Star Wars and Back to the Future family growing up than this movie. But, you know, I've seen it a handful of times, like I said, probably three times. A couple of years ago, I watched the whole quadrilogy in a row. And, you know, I think Temple of Doom was my least favorite. Crystal Skull was my least favorite. But
I never saw Crystal Skull. Temple of Doom is definitely the worst of the three. I think pretty much everyone agrees about that.
I mean, Temple of Doom growing up was always my favorite because really loved the scary,
I guess I'm wrong.
The scary aspect of it, and just it was so different and so unique. I really enjoyed it. I really liked Short Round because he was also in The Goonies.
Yep.
And so, you know, Temple of Doom was always my favorite because I think that was probably the first one that, like, I actually, like, remember, like, I know I probably saw Raiders first, but I remember Temple of Doom. And so that one is higher on the nostalgia for me. You know, and Spielberg said when he made these that he wanted to create an American James Bond. And that really is more on display in the beginning of Temple of Doom than it is here with Raiders. So
that's interesting that he said that. I did not realize that. And having watched, what have I watched, like 15, 16 James Bond movies so far this year, I definitely can see a lot of parallels between Indiana Jones and James Bond. So that makes a lot of sense. And I, you know, so much so that if I did not have veto power over James Bond movies, I might have thought about suggesting a James Bond movie. And I even did consider Dr. No as one of my suggestions for next week, just as the, you know, we watched the intro to Indiana Jones, watch the intro to James Bond. That's interesting. And going back to what you said, Crystal Skull, when I saw it when it came out, and I really didn't like it, mostly because I was like kind of OD'd on Shia LaBeouf at that point. But when I rewatched it a few years ago, I thought that it was not as bad as I remembered. It's not a great movie, but I don't think it's like you can go worse than that
movie. Yeah, my kids want to watch more of them, so I guess we'll see if we make it to number four.
So what did your kids think?
They had a blast, especially the older one. Awesome. She loved it. The second, the younger one, I don't even know if she knew it was flying. But she was like mesmerized the whole time. And I think, you know, part of what makes this such a great movie and like such a, like a fun movie that everyone could like is that there's just like always something happening. So like she was just like mesmerized by like the constant like action and forward momentum. Like there's like no, like there was no time for her to get bored.
Yeah.
Because there's just like always, it's just like one action scene to the next, the next, the next. It's almost like a video game. Like, and like in each time he has to use like different powers and a different skill set to like find his way out. It was just, yeah, it was just like, they had a blast. They both really loved it.
Yeah, and it's really a wonderful tribute to practical effects and stunt work. Because, I mean, you don't see a lot of movies now that are made in the same way that Indiana Jones was, where you see Harrison Ford or a stunt person actually up against a car, going under a car, falling off a cliff, like taking a real beating. And you don't get that a lot in modern movies because most of that would just be CGI'd away or purely a stuntman with CGI components. But this is just, it's incredible to watch really good practical effects in effect.
I'm assuming Harrison Ford's still a stuntman for this movie, though.
I would assume so.
I know he did a lot of the stunts himself, but some of the more dangerous stuff he did not, like going under the truck.
I'm sure you've both been to the show at Disney World where they
Actually, my mom got pulled from the audience to be in the show when we went there. I think I was 10 or 11. It was like 1990, 1991, and we went and did the Universal Live Adventure, whatever, and she got pulled to go to be a part of the cast. She wanted me to make sure I told that story. And
was that
really
at Universal
fun.
Or was that at MGM Studios? I think it was at MGM Studios.
It might have been MGM Studios, but it was part of the whole Disney trip we took when I was a kid. So, but it was really cool.
Growing up, I remember the stunt show from Disney a little bit better than I even remember the movie itself. Mm. So the opening scene is obviously featured in that stunt show, and then the scene with the airplane as well is featured in that stunt show. So, you've seen it, I'm assuming. You said it?
Yeah, several times, as recently as last year. And that was like the way we got my kids to be interested in the movie was we're like, hey, remember when we went to Disney World and we saw that cool show with the explosions and the giant rock? And they're like, oh, there's a movie about that.
Yeah, and I believe part of the truck scene is also in that show where they drive the truck into the village and hide it and all that.
Yeah.
Shit. Oh, yeah. Which is that. I mean, I think, like, maybe we can just hop right in. Because that is one of my, like, I think that's one of my favorite scenes of the movie. It's just so clever the way that they do that. And every time I've watched this movie, whenever that scene happens, I get really excited.
Yeah. I mean, it's really fun because they set it up so well. Like, they cut to Indy getting to Cairo, and you immediately sense and feel at ease that he's been there before. He knows these people. You have Sala there to help him. And he's entrenched with these villagers, and they all seem to know him. And so, of course, it makes sense, you know, at a pivotal moment, they're going to come out of nowhere to help him. And it's really great. Like, I really love that because it actually pays off subtle things like that, you know, really, really well. Like, and especially like everything with, you know, the monkey and the other dig teams and the Nazis, like, they do a really good job setting things up and making sure they pay off within the scope of the movie. There's very few lingering questions that I had for this, really, that were actually plot-based.
Oh, yeah. This is like a masterclass.
It's a tight movie.
Like, everything they show you in this movie pays off.
Yeah,
absolutely. Like, sometimes right away, sometimes later, but it's just like everything is just like perfectly constructed. It's such a well-written screenplay.
I definitely agree, and you know, there were even things that like I had kind of forgotten about that happen. And what's the name of the Nazi guy with the glasses?
Major Tote.
Like when he grabs the fact that he grabs the head of the staff, and because it's hot, it burns into his hand like the Wet Bandits almost.
Yep.
That's what reminded me of, like, Home Alone. And but he's, because of that, he is able to what he thinks, find out where the Ark is buried. And then that comes back.
And I never realized who was originally supposed to
play that role?
Who's that?
Roman Polanski.
Oh, really?
Oh,
Oh, crazy.
He was offered the role. He turned it down because of, like, scheduling conflicts.
Well, there's a connection to Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
There you go.
Sure.
But yeah, I never put it together until, like, a very recent watch of this, when they were talking about having the symbol and it only being one half, that one half symbol was his hand. It took me forever to put that together.
I had forgotten that happened, and until they said it's only one half, I was like, oh yeah, that's because it's his hand. Like, I'd totally forgotten that had all happened. And then when they revealed, I was like, oh cool. Like, I kind of guessed it.
Really cool.
I had seen it. Yeah. The way the plot moves forward, and the only thing I would say is, like, I kind of wish we got a little bit more at the end of the movie. Like, I feel like the movie just sort of ends kind of abruptly.
Right. They do get to do a good job of wrapping it, making sure that it's the same four people in a room at the end of the movie that you got at the beginning. You know, it's the exact same four guys having the exact same discussion, and instead of starting the investigation, they're like, all right, thanks for the help. You know, clean hands, case closed, bye, end of movie, go home.
So what did we learn here? Yeah. Well, not to do it again.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
We're not doing that again.
No, that's true.
Question for you guys.
Yeah.
Why is his name Indiana?
Well, it was named after the dog.
Isn't that answered in Last Crusade?
Answered in a future movie, which is such a weird thing.
He named himself Indiana.
Like, can you imagine a movie today, like, coming out and, like, having the character have a name and just, like, they don't explain why everyone calls him Indiana?
Well, it's funny, I believe he's actually named after George Lucas's dog or Steven Spielberg's dog?
I don't remember. So yeah,
one of their dogs is named Indiana, and they named the character after their dog. And that's why you get the joke in Last Crusade that he was named after the dog, because he really was named after a dog.
Because it's like everyone calls him Indy, which is short for Indiana, which is itself a nickname that is never explained.
Yeah,
exactly.
That's why it's extra funny in Last Crusade when he's like, no, his name is Henry Jones Jr. Come on.
I think for me, it was like he was always Indiana Jones. So it was something I never really thought about, because growing up, it was just, this is Indiana Jones.
I just haven't seen it in a while. My kids asked me why they call him that. And I was like, oh, I'm sure they'll explain at some point. But then they didn't.
Yeah. I just assumed Indiana was a name growing up. I never really thought about it. So, you know, we connected this from Citizen Kane last week, and this was Jim Crumley's suggestion. So we do have a voicemail from Jim. So I'm going to go ahead and play that voicemail, and we can hear why Jim suggested Raiders of the Lost Ark for his connection this week.
Yeah, and then we'll come back and we'll get into some more specific stuff.
Hi, guys. Jim Crumley here. Thanks for picking my suggestion of Raiders of the Lost Ark. I was all set to suggest Touch of Evil when the final scene of Citizen Kane reminded me of the warehouse scene of Raiders of the Lost Ark. Raiders is one of my all-time favorites. It's got something for everyone. Adventure, comedy, good versus evil, romance, snakes. I remember as a boy reenacting the Ark opening scene while I was walking to school in the winter. I loved the movie then, and I still love it now. I hope that you guys enjoyed talking about it. I can't wait to hear what you guys had to say about Raiders of the Lost Ark. Thanks.
Awesome. Thanks, Jim.
The first thing I gotta ask is, how was he reenacting the Ark opening scene? Was he, like, tying himself to a pole?
I don't know. Or was he acting like the minister at the end?
Did he getting his face melted off?
Yeah, was he just pretending his face was being melted off because he was so cold? I don't understand.
Yeah.
I'll have to ask for details later on.
I have more questions about Jim's voicemail than I did about Raiders of the Lost Ark in general.
Yeah. Don't look, Jim. Don't open your eyes.
Yeah, that's true. I do love the face melting, though. It's so good.
It's so terrifying.
It's the perfect use of, like, 80s effects. But it really did work. It really did work so well. And I don't know if that is GIF-able on Twitter. I mean, it should be. It's definitely GIF-able. But I don't know if there's a GIF of that. But you know, if not, then we need to make that a GIF and tweet that out.
I mean, so that we can just, you know, traumatize all of our listeners and anyone else who stumbles onto our Twitter feeds.
Were your kids scared by the face melting?
No, the only thing they were scared of really was the tarantulas and the snakes.
Me too. Yeah. When in the opening scene, when they have the tarantulas all over their back, I really was that was the
scariest part for them. I think they were less scared by the snakes because, like, the movie told you that they're scary, and like Indiana Jones is afraid of them, so they're like, oh, okay, it's it's fine. But like with the tarantulas, which were just there, that like they were like screaming their heads off when they saw those.
Yeah, I think the scene I forgot about on this rewatch that I was the most startled by is when they get stuck in the tomb, and then they're trying to find their way out, and Marion stumbles into that tomb of the pharaohs where she's just surrounded by, like, bodies and arms and mummifications, and she's, like, stumbling around trying to find her way out, and they're, like, popping up from everywhere. That was freaking terrifying. Like, I don't know, that was the most startling to me, like, on a rewatch. Just, That was very effective, and that was an impressive scene, like an impressive effect. And it was really cool, actually. It was very terrifying. But yeah, the tarantulas were cool too. It didn't really bother me as much. I don't know, I'm more creeped out by, like, skeletons and mummified corpses than I am, like, animals, I think.
Yeah, I feel like with snakes, for me... Yeah, the snakes normally don't bother me too much. It's just... that the lately I've had kind of a weird aversion. There's a lot of, like, random snakes I've seen crawling around back there, or slithering around back there, and I think the snakes impacted me a little bit more this time, and I felt one with Indiana Jones and his aversion to snakes. Is there one thing I was going to ask when we were talking about, like, kids, you know, the kids' reactions to this movie, which I do think is just, like, super interesting because I didn't get to experience this movie that much as a kid. But is there a modern version of Indiana Jones for kids?
I'm not sure. I mean, not modern. Like, the Goonies kind of reminds me a little bit. It's more, and that's more overtly for kids.
But that's not modern. Like, is there, like,
that's what I said. It's not modern.
Yeah. Like, is there, like, a... I'm just trying to think. Is there any action hero who's like Indiana Jones for kids these days, or should they make one?
They should make one.
Yeah, I guess maybe one of the movies on my list could be that. Now that I'm looking at my list of connections,
I think most modern movies for kids are far too invested in the sci-fi, magic, or futuristic spy element of young adult fiction, rather than the old school adventuring, treasure seeking that we grew up with. So I think, like, you have, like, your Spy Kids and your Percy Jacksons and your Harry Potterses and your and so on, but you don't necessarily have your, you know, old school throwback adventurer team of kids going on a treasure hunt, unfortunately. But yeah, I think there may be an animated version of that, but as far as live action goes, I'm not anything that I've seen come out in the last 15, 20 years, but it definitely is something that I think is a hole that could be filled for sure.
And are there still rumors of, like, doing more Indiana Jones movies? Did any of that come up in your research?
There was one that was supposed to come out next year.
Yeah, Indiana Jones 5 was supposed to come out next year.
No, it's supposed to come out next year. I don't know if it's still expected to. And Harrison Ford was going to play Indiana Jones with the de-aging technology.
Yep. Oh, no, really?
Yep.
Oh.
So, you know, you'll have a 80-year-old Indiana Jones running around. I mean, he was 39 when he shot. He was 37 when he shot Raiders of the Lost Ark. And that was, you know, 39 years ago. So, yeah.
I would appreciate if they don't de-age him. They could put him in, like, the Sean Connery role, right? Just give him, not Shia LaBeouf, but give him a Miles Teller, maybe, or something.
I think that's what Indiana Jones 4 was supposed to be, with him and Shia LaBeouf, you know?
Like a passing the baton. But it's,
and it got panned royally, so...
Yeah, you know, so the next one's supposed to come out in 2022, it says now, and it's going to be directed by James Mangold.
I guess James
Disney
Mangold,
CEO okay. Bob Iger said this will not be the conclusion of the franchise, so they're going to keep building this.
I guess James Mangold did some good Wolverine movies, so maybe he could do a good Indiana Jones movie.
Did Indiana Jones like kind of like invent the genre of like that like action, like kind of like the even before Die Hard, was this like the first like one guy by himself just like kicking ass action movie?
I'd say to a degree, yeah.
I would say James Bond is probably before that, just because that's top of mind. And there's probably like, what about Western, like Clint Eastwood Western movies?
And this definitely has a little bit of a Western vibe to it also. The hat, the whip.
Mm-hmm. The horse.
Yeah, definitely the horse. Felt like, yeah, it's definitely like a mix of Western. It's like a Taylor Swift kind of, where it's like country, but not quite country, like more pop than country. So.
Yeah, I thought they did a great job of mixing genres with this movie where, you know, it definitely feels like an old school adventure movie. It feels like a Western. It feels like a kicking Nazi asses movie, you know, an action movie. It's a comedy. It's a romance. It's, you know, it does a great job of blending all the genres. And it kind of makes you wonder, you know, who is more responsible for this script between, you know, George Lucas and Steven Spielberg. And I think when you look at it, you really have to think, oh yeah, probably Spielberg was a lot heavier of a hand in the script than George Lucas probably was.
Well, and it was written by Lawrence Kasdan, who wrote The Empire Strikes Back.
Also true.
So at least the screenplay was by him. That's when I was watching the credits and Kathleen Kennedy's name shot up as assistant.
I noticed that
to
too.
Mr. Spielberg. Yeah.
Yeah, she was like Mr. Spielberg's associate or something.
Yeah, I was like, man, she's really had a nice rise in the.
Yeah, the rise of Kathleen Kennedy could be a really interesting documentary podcast. Like she's had quite the career. So.
And now she still runs. She still runs.
Runs Lucasfilm.
Yeah, she runs Lucasfilm now.
Yeah. Although I guess maybe Kevin Feige is her boss.
Lucasfilm was the production company for Raiders.
Correct.
Yes. You know, another thing, just kind of going off what you just said, Brendan, about it having all these genres, including comedy. One thing you mentioned to us in our chat the other day is you said, what was the funniest line in the movie? And we each bring our funniest line in the movie. And I'll admit, like, I like this movie. It's a lot of fun, but I didn't like find myself laughing that much during it. When you asked that, I was like, I don't know. I don't really have a favorite line. I didn't think it was that funny.
It's more amusing. I thought the funniest scene was the one where like that guy, like that, like assassin comes out with that knife and like does his whole shtick, and then he just shoots him.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and that was actually, I know this has been a urban legend around this movie for a while, confirmed by Harrison Ford, that he was so ill on set that day. He was originally supposed to film a massive sword fight with that assassin, and instead he improvised just shooting the guy, and they left it in the film.
That's funny.
So there you go.
Yeah, that is what one of the parts of this movie that it worked super well. It was very funny. It was very wry. I like that quite.
Indy shot first.
There's no debate on that one.
No debate. But yeah, I mean, I guess mostly what I was thinking of is the stuff that's like the campy throwback, like obviously ripped from the movies of the 40s and 50s type humor, where it's like, you know, whether it's Sala catching the date in midair, seeing the monkey and saying bad date, or Marion and Indy with having that nonsensical scene with the mirror where she flips the mirror, hits him in the face, and he makes the most godly scream that never would have happened just from hitting somebody in the face.
Yeah, that
was
weird.
And then she goes, "What did you say?" And it's like, wait, what? That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah,
so it's like that sort of cheesy humor that I really like, and I think holds up because it's not meant to be laugh out loud funny. It's meant to be homage-y funny to the types of movies that it's pulling from. So I really appreciate it.
The poor monkey. I felt bad for the monkey. Yeah. The monkey had to die so Indiana Jones could live.
Well, he was a spy der monkey.
Oh no, that can go right back with the people getting hit in the face with a mirror. In terms of humor, it doesn't hold up.
But he was a spider monkey.
All right. Well, pivoting. What else do you guys want to talk about this movie? I would like to throw a little bit of love just for that opening scene, and I don't know if it's technically a cold open, because I don't remember when Raiders of the Lost Ark comes on screen, the title card. But you know that opening, and it's just like I wish there were more scenes like that opening, because it was.
I'm sure.
Indiana Jones, like, on a small mission to try to steal some artifact, even though, like, the rest of the movie, he's trying to get an artifact, but it's, like, just these smaller missions. It was very fun to watch that and to watch all the traps.
Two things. One, you can't even really call it a cold open because it directly relates, because at the end, it's the same guy. And that's why he gets to say, once again, we find there's nothing you can possess that I cannot take away.
Oh, true.
And, you know, so it's Belloc the entire way, which is great. Like, it's such a great payoff when he gets to Cairo and, you know, Sala's like, the natives call this new man Belloc. And you see the realization on Indy's face, like, it's Belloc, the same guy that you guys know from the beginning of the film. Now we're going to do this whole dance again. And the other thing that I realized upon watching this is that the Marvel movies have stolen this cold open style as well. Like, there are a lot of Marvel movies where they have a cold open heist or action scene before the credits. And this sort of paved the way for that, and it kind of makes sense.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of other. I mean, obviously Guardians of the Galaxy.
Guardians does it. Captain America does it.
The first Captain America does it?
Was it the second Captain America, or was it Age of Ultron does it? Some of the Avengers movies do it. I can't
remember. Yeah, I mean,
the Guardians definitely does it, and yeah.
Yeah, I guess Age of Ultron does, because they steal the scepter at the beginning of Age of Ultron. Exactly.
Yeah, and I mean, so, you know, and Star-Lord is a direct ripoff or reference or homage or whatever you want to call it, love letter to Indiana Jones.
Yeah, I mean, direct and intentional, too. I mean, because he's all about 80s nostalgia. Like, he's doing that to be Indiana Jones. That's why be so fresh in my mind. There definitely are cold opens in James Bond movies, so that's pretty normal to have the cold opens, and usually they don't relate that much to the full plot of the movie, though. At least what I've seen so far.
Speaking of the cold open, I want to give a quick shout out to one of Indy's guides in the cold open, played by the late great Alfred Molina.
He died
a couple of years ago.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Most well known for playing Dr. Otto Octavius in Spider-Man 2, but among many other great roles. And this was his very first movie. So you can't call it a cameo, obviously, but it's one of those, there's a famous guy before he was famous performances.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I didn't realize this was a.
Have you guys seen the scene from recently enshrined Mount Rushmore sitcom Big Bang Theory about this movie?
No.
So there's a scene in the Big Bang Theory where they watch it together, the group, and it's Amy, who's Mai Bialik's character. It's her first time seeing it. And, you know, the guys are all really excited for her to see it. They sit down, they watch it, and she's like, okay, I mean, I guess that was okay, but, like, you realize the character Indiana Jones is not relevant to the plot of the movie. And they're like, what are you talking about? He's like, the whole movie. They're like, no. She's like, no. If he had never been involved, the Nazis would have eventually found the Ark and opened it up and died.
Yep.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, there was no need for any agent. That's a great point. I never really thought about it.
And of course, like, the guys all get, like, completely frazzled and defensive and, like,
right.
And she just, like, unraveled their favorite movie of all time.
Do you watch a lot of Big Bang Theory?
I used to. I watched it for a number of seasons and then I quit.
I don't think I've ever actually watched an episode of Big Bang Theory.
Yeah, I always thought it was okay. I didn't think it was great, but I thought it was funny.
Mm-hmm. Another thing that I found when I was researching this movie, so I was like looking up connections, and I was like, oh, maybe on a MacGuffin. And then I was reading about MacGuffin. The Ark really doesn't classify as a MacGuffin because the whole point of a MacGuffin is it's something that is inconsequential to the plot of the movie. Like, everybody's chasing it, but it doesn't actually have any significance or have any actual powers. Whereas the Ark at the end of this movie obviously does have, you know, unlimited power, and it melts the faces of anybody who looks at it. So, at least under my interpretation, this would not be a MacGuffin. I don't know if you guys agree.
Correct. It is not.
I didn't know that was part of the definition. It has to be, because, like, in, like, Infinity War, the Infinity Stones are considered MacGuffins, right? But they're very powerful.
Sure. They do end up mattering, so I don't... So, maybe they're a MacGuffin in the specific movie that they're in, but overall, they're not a MacGuffin. I don't know. I maybe need a lesson on MacGuffins.
All right, well, here you go. In fiction, a MacGuffin is an object, device, or event that is nests of characters, but insignificant, unimportant, or irrelevant in itself. So that is, according to Wikipedia, what a MacGuffin is. So, you know, let's see. Lost Ark is not...
It's on this list, although the Rosebud, the meaning of Rosebud in Citizen Kane is written as a MacGuffin, which that sounds right to me.
The Rosebud is written as a MacGuffin.
Yes.
Right, because it's ultimately
that for sure is meaningless.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's true.
It's ultimately meaningless. So that doesn't make sense. Yeah. But the video still...
say George Lucas said that R2-D2 was a MacGuffin in the original Star Wars. Go ahead. What about the Infinity Stones?
Yeah, I don't think the Infinity Stones can be classified as a MacGuffin.
Yeah, it does seem like they do have the Infinity Stones listed on this Wikipedia article, but I don't know. Yeah, I don't know if they. We started to realize that a lot of these films required MacGuffins, like the orb in Guardians of the Galaxy, the scepter in the Avengers films, and the notion that all of them could be a stone around the same time that Joss wrote the tag in. So it seems like they started as MacGuffins, and then it realized they could be more important than just being.
Got it. Okay, well, that makes sense. That's some back logic. I'll take it.
Yeah.
Sure, why not? But anyway, Indiana Jones.
Yes. We talked a lot of Marvel on this, but, you know, they're obviously inspired by this movie. You know, how much does the plot of Raiders of the Lost Ark tie into other Indiana Jones movies? And, Brennan, you're probably the most well-versed.
Yeah, so mostly it's character crossover.
Are there things we can take from this movie for the next one?
For Temple of Doom, not so much, because Temple of Doom actually takes place before Raiders of the Lost Ark. But certainly for Last Crusade, many, many characters overlap and plot devices overlap. And you're still battling Nazis, which is great. So there you go.
Yeah.
It's the same basic plot, except... you know, you have two Indiana Joneses in Sean Connery and Harrison Ford instead of just one. And, you know, you get Marcus Brody, you get the return of Sala, you get the, you know, young love interest. It's all, you know, it is pretty closely tied together, and then it all ends with somebody's face melting off. So, you know, it's pretty actually pretty close.
Does Marion return for any of the movies? Does she return for Last Crusade?
She returns for four. She's in four.
That's right. She's in four. Yeah.
Because she has, you know, Shia LaBeouf as a illegitimate baby. So there you go.
Oh, that's correct. Yep.
Yeah.
Spoilers.
Which, by the way, you know, let's just get it out there because people are going to mention it if we don't talk about it. But the relationship between Indiana Jones and Marriott Ravenwood is creepy AF, considering their history. But, you know, when this movie picks up, they're both adults, so I think it's okay. But it all hinges on the fact that they had a relationship when she was a teenager and he was in his mid-20s. And
yeah, I picked up on that. There is like one or two lines about that. And I was trying to figure out if that was how that worked.
Yeah, like, because Harrison Ford is 37 or 39, I can't remember which, when this movie was made. And Karen Allen's character is supposed to be 24 or 25. And they hadn't seen each other in 10 years, which would mean the last time they saw each other and had a romantic relationship, she was at best 15, maybe 16.
I don't think there's a great portrayal of women in this movie in general. Like, Marion is the only female character.
I mean, she is a badass. But
she is. But, like, there's no other female characters in this movie. In general, there's not a ton of characters in this movie overall. There's only, what, like 6-7 main characters? I don't know if that's rectified in future movies or not.
It's certainly not in Temple of Doom. I mean, and you could say that Willie Scott gets it worse than Marion Ravenwood does, even in her portrayal. You know, because she is portrayed as a prissy diva who doesn't want to do any ass kicking and doesn't throughout the film. And I think that's why a lot of people hate her as a character, you know, but that's, they didn't want to just rinse and repeat what worked with Indy and Marion with Indy and Willie Scott. So, I'm glad that they didn't do that, but Yeah, there was a lot of backlash to that character as well. I think they try to rectify that by getting a middle ground with the main female protagonist slash antagonist in Last Crusade, who turns out to be the love interest of both Joneses and one of the main bad guys. Spoiler alerts for Last Crusade. But it's a really cool twist on the concept and definitely gives that character a lot more agency and a lot more to do than the previous two films.
Mm-hmm.
But the worst part is, talking about it, I can't remember her name, but I remember the other two names. So...
Yeah, I wish I had Indiana Jones movies. I've seen them, but it's not like Star Wars or Back to the Future where I really could tell you like plot for plot, character for character. It takes me sometimes a couple minutes to remember like what happened in which movie. But I do think that Raiders stands out on its own, especially as like a non-part of a trilogy, just as a standalone movie. Raiders really stands up on its own. Who are the Raiders of the Lost Ark? Would you say that's Indiana and Marion?
It's
everyone.
Yeah, it's everyone. They're all raiding this tomb trying to find this ancient treasure. So yeah. They're all the raiders.
Okay. Yeah. I was thinking about that. I was like, what is the who is the real parasite of Raiders of the Lost Ark?
Al Davis.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I took a look at Harrison Ford's filmography, and his run from 1973 to 1983 is like one of the greatest things you've ever seen. He's not necessarily a lot of these. He's not like the lead in, but the list of movies that he's in during that period of time: 1973, American Graffiti; 1974, The Conversation; 1977, Star Wars; 1979, Apocalypse Now; 1980, The Empire Strikes Back; 1981, Raiders of the Lost Ark; 1982, Blade Runner; 1983, Return of the Jedi.
I mean, that's an incredible run.
That's like eight. It's like all-time classic movies in 10 years.
He could have retired in 1983 and would still be considered one of the most beloved actors of all time.
So, yeah, seriously. I mean, he really has small parts in some of those, like American Graffiti, The Conversation, Apocalypse Now. But man, this guy just—he hitched his wheel to the right three directors.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah, I thought about suggesting Apocalypse Now, since that is a blind spot. I just wasn't sure how big of a role he had in Apocalypse Now.
I think
Now,
he's only in one scene.
I wasn't sure if it would be a good
choice. He's in one scene at the beginning when he gives Martin Sheen's character his orders, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's not a major player, but
he is in it. And that movie has a lot of small parts like that. You know, where it's, oh, that's Lawrence Fishburne. Oh, that's blah, blah, blah. That pop up here and there, like, you know, before they were, it's got a lot of before they were famous people popping up.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. So someday, this is probably not the right connection, but at some point, as I was saying earlier, so this is the, of all the movies that we've covered, I think this is the least amount of notes I've taken. I think I have three lines of notes before I got into connections and suggestions for this movie, just because like I think that speaks to how exciting this movie is, that like I didn't really want to look down at my phone to take any notes, but also there's just like not a ton to really take notes on. I didn't think like I didn't have anything that I wrote down that I was like, oh, I have to make sure I talk. I would just kind of cover that as we were talking about this movie. I had one lingering question that I wrote down, but I was curious if you guys had anything else that you wrote down in your notes that you definitely wanted to make sure we talked about.
Nope.
Yeah. What about you, Bob? I'll let you go first if you did.
No, go ahead. I'm good.
Yeah, so I have a few I wrote down. Just some are serious and some are kind of funny. Just quick notes I wrote down. So starting at the very beginning, so we see the whole boulder release scene in the cave, and Indy is underneath it looking up. Why didn't he just duck and let the boulder roll over?
I think it still would have crushed him.
No, because it's on a ramp. And that's kind of how...
Or do you mean, like, really close to where the boulder comes out?
Yeah. Like, he could have just ducked down really low and it would have just rolled over him, right? I guess the answer is he would have been stuck in the cave, right?
Yeah, I think the boulder would have blocked the exit, and also all of the arrows that shot at the end also, like, would have killed him.
That's true. So, it just kind of bothered me, that's all.
but then you don't get that classic shot.
Right, exactly. You wouldn't get the classic shot, and you should shut up because it's an awesome moment. So, but I also wanted to note that Indiana Jones is a really shitty travel packer. He basically opens up this big leather suitcase, and the only three things he throws in there are his leather jacket, a whip, and a gun. He did not throw anything else in there. That was it. I'm like, all right, dude, you are
bad. Yeah, but that's nice to speak to his look, though, right? Like Indiana Jones has he has a great look, right? He's got a classic look with the leather jacket, the whip, you know, and the whip as a weapon. Because I think, you know, growing up, I always thought of the whip as like a tool and a weapon. But then as I got older, I was like, oh, wait, no, this is like a bullwhip, right? Like, this isn't something that was used for this purpose before this.
Correct. It's a lion whip. Yeah, if you take the beginning of Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade as canon, it is a lion-taming whip.
Oh, that's right. I remember that.
You know, that's if it's the same whip that he got, you know, during that cold open of that movie. But I don't know. Who's to say?
I mean, I feel like he probably lost the whip at some point and he had to replace it.
So this was a big one for me, and I've got a couple of things that sort of spin off of this same idea, but so what are you guys' favorite things that you noticed in this movie that have been used as homages in other media, whether it's TV shows that have taken directly from the Indiana Jones trilogy or Raiders specifically, TV shows, other movies, video games, etc. Like, what do you think has been the best IP that has directly used this film as a touch point?
I felt like Aladdin is very much rips off stuff from that. The scene where like Jafar abandons him in the pit.
Mm-hmm.
There were a couple other things. Just the whole milieu of like just like this guy on his own in the desert. Had a very similar vibe to me as Aladdin.
Yeah, we already talked about Guardians of the Galaxy, but I do feel like the opening of Guardians of the Galaxy, which I just recently watched a month or two ago, it is so interesting to compare that with the opening to Indiana Jones and how so. I know we already talked about that, but I think that's a good one.
And there's one that I never realized until very recently, because we recently started rewatching season 3 of Lost. And there's a scene in season 3 of Lost with two characters on a beach that is very reminiscent of the scene between Marion and Belloc in the tent.
The dining, when they're eating, or he's trying to feed
her. Yeah, when they're eating, and he offers her food, and he gives her a dress, and he wants to make her feel pretty, and then she turns it around on him and starts getting him drunk. But there's a scene in season 3 of Lost that is a direct homage to that scene, and I never really picked up on it until I watched both of those things this week back to back and was like, oh yeah, those are kind of the same thing. So
and that is a great getting drunk, and you can see the knife that she's trying to slip away. That was a very fun scene to watch.
Yeah, for sure. How many shots do you guys think you guys can do consecutively before you pass?
Well, were they taking shots of liquor or was that wine?
Well, I'm pretty sure that was like wine or like some kind of clear. It was clear, so it had to be some kind of vodka or something. Or gin.
Yeah, sure. I thought maybe it was like white wine, but I guess that would make more sense if it was like ouzo or some sort of liquor.
Yeah, I know it was definitely whiskey at the beginning.
Yeah, she was it. Yeah. Mm. Yeah, she could really hold her own.
Yeah,
she's
definitely
got quite the alcohol tolerance.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so the question I wrote down is, why wasn't Indy confused when he was climbing up out of the cave with the Nazi flag? Did you guys have any idea about that?
No, I guess I didn't really pick up on it or think about it too hard.
Because Sala was out there waiting for him.
Yeah, but he also knew it was his only way.
At the rope, and then all of a sudden Sala was gone. Right, Sala was captured, and then all of a sudden they throw a Nazi flag down to him, and that's when he climbed up. And so I thought, like, that was going to tip him off, and he didn't seem to be tipped off at all that it was a Nazi flag that he was climbing out of.
Yeah, or maybe he was just so scared of snakes he didn't care. Mm-hmm. He just climbed without really thinking about it. I mean, hard to say.
Yeah. Could be. Yeah, I do like that they set up the snakes early on in the opening scene, and it's like that's his one, like, kryptonite.
Yeah. With Jacques.
Right, his one weakness. Yeah. All right, so let's move on to feedback, unless you guys have anything else that you wanted to talk about.
No, I think it's just important to note that we all really love this movie, and you know, we're gonna get to our own ratings in a minute, but it's really hard to criticize a movie like this because we all grew up with it and we all hold it very. I mean, I know I hold it very dearly. There are some things that I think haven't aged great, but it's interesting what movies we're willing to forgive the things that don't age great and what we aren't. And I think this is a movie that has skated that line very well into continuing to age well, even if there are some things within it that we can acknowledge maybe haven't as much. But I do overall think it does the best it can for the time that it was made to make up for that. And especially with later films, it makes up for the things it gets wrong now.
And, you know, not to keep going back to James Bond, but there is a lot more in James Bond that ages poorly than in this movie.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, Brennan, why don't you read off what we got for feedback?
Yeah, so we got quite a bit of feedback today. So on top of Jim's voicemail, he always just wanted to let us know that he did rate it a 5. He also sent us in this really cool compilation that I think we all watched before we started recording today that basically broke down a bunch of different shots that Spielberg used in the making of this film that were direct homages to films that came before it. It started with the classic Japanese cinema film Yojimbo and ends with the final shot being an homage to Citizen Kane, the final shot of Citizen Kane side by side. So it's a really cool video. It's on Vimeo. I don't think we can put it in our show notes, but if people want to...
We'll tweet it out next to this.
Yeah, we can tweet it out at some point after this is released. Or you can just at Jim Crumley and ask him to send you the link to the video. But it's pretty cool.
And his video reminds me that we didn't even do connections. So we'll do that. We'll get through all the feedback and then we'll do connections before we do ratings, I guess.
It's basically, you know, Jim points out the connections to Citizen Kane. And, you know, as my sister said to us, you know, it basically both are about idolization of a precious object.
Yep. So, I was trying to remember what exactly she said that she wanted to
be. I was waiting until around this time to say it exactly. But, oh, okay. You know, I know you said that was more of a Next Picture Show type title. So
no, I like it. I like it. Actually,
I do like it. I mean,
yeah, I know. It's always nice when we can have a way to succinctly say what the connection is.
Yeah, and I mean, it's also a search for truth.
Between the movies that we're covering.
Yeah, and it's a search for truth about that object and what power that object holds over the people that are trying to find out the information, you know. And then it also ends up not really mattering and being... you know, hidden away where nobody can ever find out the truth. You know, and it's got a lot of connections to other movies that we've covered, you know, within the Nazization of it all, battling Nazis, what else?
Escape in terms of battling Nazis. Yeah, I didn't think about that. I also thought for a connection back to Citizen Kane, this movie takes place in 1936, which is right around the same time Citizen Kane takes place.
Yep.
And we did, you know, we've done a couple World War II movies.
Yeah.
Sid Red Line and The Great Escape.
Yep. And the other connection to Citizen Kane was poison playing a role in the plot.
Yeah.
In both movies, there's poison that plays a role. The bad dates, as well as the, I think it was Susan Kane who tries to kill herself at the end of Citizen Kane. Did you guys have any other connections to other movies that we've covered?
I don't think so.
Not off the top of my head. I mean,
So I had two written down. So for Hot Fuzz, there is like some subverting of expectations, especially in that scene with the assassin with the big sword, and then Indy just shoots him.
And
the fact that Indiana Jones is afraid of snakes, that he's like this adventurer, but he's afraid of snakes, which is the style of humor in Hot Fuzz.
Yeah, and speaking of Hot Fuzz, the actor who plays Belloc, what's his name? I missed it.
Paul Freeman.
Paul Freeman is in Hot Fuzz. He is Reverend Shooter. I guess he is, and he also plays Ivan Ooze in the Power Rangers movies, but that's not a connection.
We haven't yet covered that. I would also say that the location for this movie and then the maps, the way that they move along, looks like that in Brothers Bloom as well. So I just feel like the costumes in this movie and the setting really reminded me a lot of Brothers Bloom as well, for another connection. This was, of all movies that we've covered, this one did not have any trains in it, though. And it feels like every movie we cover has trains in it. And Last Crusade is going to have a vital train scene, but Raiders of the Lost Ark does not have a train in it that I saw. With as much traveling as they do, there's no train.
Yeah, it's too bad. We will have to rectify that with our next pick.
All right, what else do we got for feedback? We only got through one.
Our good buddy Jeff wrote in, have loved this movie since it first came out. I probably watch it a couple times a year. Hey, Jeff, me too, buddy. However, I can't watch it without thinking of Amy Farrah Fowler telling Sheldon Indiana Jones and zero impact on the outcome of the movie. Hey, there
that's
you go.
What I've said.
Spoiler alert. I didn't realize that that's what that was from. Yeah, from Big Bang Theory. There you go. So
there you
Jeff
go.
And,
I didn't make it up.
Yep.
Doesn't mean I like it any less, but it does crack me up every time. Really not much to dislike about this movie. Gives it action, romance, and humor all rolled into one. Gives it a 4.5. Molly wrote in to say, Raiders of the Lost Ark has everything. Action, adventure, romance, comedy, great music.
Kids is there an echo in here?
Huh? Yeah, I know, right? Hey,
right, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, this is basically one
big...
That's
good.
Indiana Jones circle jerk, all right?
Yeah.
Kids love it, adults love it, men and women both love it. Most importantly, though, it has Harrison Ford. He is the perfect leading man in almost any kind of movie, and I love him in this. Karen Allen is also great, so I guess all that makes it a perfect movie. 5 stars. All right, nice. Now we're going to bring down the room a little.
Hey, before we do that, she brought up the music.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's such a great, like, it's John Williams' score, which John Williams nails it almost every time. And much like the Star Wars score is perfect for Star Wars, the Indiana Jones score is perfect for Indiana Jones.
Yeah, it's the really classic dun-da-da-da, dun-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, da-da-da-da-da. It's just like, you know exactly what movie franchise you're in as soon as you hear just those notes, and it's perfect.
Yeah, my only complaint about the score is I kept wanting more of the score, and they would, like, cut off the song. Like, they would play it, and then they wouldn't play, like, the full score. I was like, come on.
They don't really, until, like, the end, they don't really start playing the whole thing. It cuts off in the middle.
All right, let's bring it down a little bit. What do we got?
So Owen wrote in, as expected, Indiana Jones just isn't in my wheelhouse. I can admire it and see why it has been a hit and would appeal to large amounts of the population. Largely achieves what it aims to do. The soundtrack is enjoyable, but almost overpowers the movie and did tend to spoil how certain scenes would turn out. I think that actually is an interesting note. I think that also leads into the intentionality of Spielberg and Lucas wanting this to feel like a homage to the, like, serial movies they used to see in the 1940s and 50s when they were growing up as little kids.
Speaking of a great score, Serial.
Yes, great score, Serial. I prefer the Cinnamon Toast Crunch jingle.
No, Serial the podcast. Dun.
I know. It was a joke on a joke.
Dun, dun. Yeah.
Anyway, but yeah, I mean, yeah, there were, you know, the adventure movies of their youth is what they were sort of going for here. And I think it works for that. But I understand if you're not used to that homage, you might, you know, how it certainly could spoil the movie in certain ways. He also says Jones strongly alluded to a relationship with a very young teenage Marion, and that just put me right off of him, and their supposed romance for him was just creepy. Yeah, we touched on that a little. I agree, that's the thing, rewatching it ages worse and worse for me every time, and definitely the worst this time.
Charles Foster Kane relationships, like Susan Kane, isn't she pretty young? When they get married as well? Isn't there a bit of a weird age? Yeah, there's a bit of a weird age gap for them, too.
Huge age gap, yeah.
So, just another connection.
Yeah, and he also talks about how our apparent alcoholism is strangely conveyed about being a heroic virtue and could be linked to her prior grooming by Jones, which I don't know that I completely got that, but I can understand how maybe her alcoholism is a byproduct of what he did to her in the past.
I think it's just that she owns a bar and she's owns a bar and she drinks a lot.
Yeah, also true.
Not like she's an alcoholic. It's more that she's just like, she can throw one back with the best of them.
Yeah. Other problematic stuff with depictions of the natives in the opening scene. I guess that didn't necessarily bother me as much because it felt very intentional to the place where the scene was supposed to be set.
And that was Peru, I believe, and, right? Yeah, which is where I've been.
It's a native tribe that lives in the jungle in Peru. I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'm talking out of school, but those tribes did exist. So how else should they be portrayed?
I will say too that as a homage to like Machu Picchu, and when I was there, so I went to Machu Picchu last year, and there's a lot of things at Machu Picchu where it's like they built, you know, the Incans built these colonies or these civilizations with like when the sunlight would hit a certain mm-hmm. hole at a certain spot, it would tell them something. They could tell time with it, and there was a lot of that with when they were finding the Ark, and
yeah.
You know, the process to find the Ark, it reminded me a lot of things that I learned when I was at Machu Picchu.
But yeah, he does admit that he's probably taking these issues a little more seriously for such a frivolous cartoonish adventure that this is meant to be. I would agree with that, to a degree. That doesn't mean that we can't still talk about things that might be problematic like we have. But yeah, at the end of the day, I think this movie does a good job balancing its tone and telling you what it's trying to be. Even if I was going purely on personal taste, he says, I wouldn't be too low on it overranking, just balancing everything out. He's going to give it a 3.5. The great Jeremiah Panhorse wrote in to say, I can't wait to hear you guys talk about Raiders of the Lost Ark. I'm a huge fan, giving it 5 stars. And our buddy Mac also said it's 5 stars, obviously. So that's going to give us an average of 6 is 4.66 to the infinity for the listeners.
4 2/3.
Average that out when we see what everybody else thinks. Why don't you go first?
I'm going to be right in line with everybody else. It was decided between 4.5 and a 5. It's I guess it's easier to just give it a 5 because why not? It's one of the best action movies ever made. I'm glad to have passed it on to another generation who will hopefully pass it on to the next. It's, as I said before, it's just such a fun movie beginning to end. There's never a break where you're bored. It's just constant action, constant momentum. Just, you want to just see more and more, spend more time with these characters. It's one of the first, if not invented, just like the summer popcorn movie. And it's holds up all these years later. So it's a 5 for me.
All right. So I really like this. You know, I just don't have the nostalgia with Indiana Jones that other people do. And I think because of that, it's, while I enjoy watching this movie, I just don't get invested in it when I watch it. Like, even when I was watching it yesterday, like, I had a lot of fun. I enjoyed it. It was perfect one for Sunday. But I just wasn't invested. And I can't even put a word on it, but I just didn't have that, like, yes, like, this is it. So it's not a 5 for me, but it's not much lower. I'm somewhere between a 4 and a 4.5, and I think I'll give it a 4.5, but I'm probably like a 4.3, really.
Well, I'm not going to get mad at it. You like what you like, and you don't like what you don't like, and you really like this movie, but not enough to give it a 5, and that's respectable.
Right. Yeah, exactly. It's just like a movie that I get a 5 to is, I don't know, I can't describe it. It's a je ne sais quoi.
Good point. Well, I mean, I get it. And for me, I think part of it is the fact that this is one of the first movies and the most important movies to me growing up as a kid in the early to mid 80s. Like, this is one of my seminal movies. For me, it's pretty untouchable, from the music to the performances to the villains to the gore to the action. It hits all the notes. We didn't even talk about the wonderful performance from John Rhys Davies as Sala. I love John Rhys Davies, and he when he was cast as Gimli in Lord of the Rings, it was like one of the happiest casting announcements I had ever read in my life, because John Rhys Davies had pretty much disappeared for 30 years, except for the occasional part on TV. And, you know, when he was cast as Sala, when he was cast as Gimli, it made me very, very happy. So, but yeah, this movie overall just holds up for me really, really well, except for the few things that we talked about that haven't aged great. It still does its job from start to finish. And for me, it's still a 5. And I can't knock it below 5. It's going to be a 5 for me. I mean, it's in my top 4 movies of all time on IMDb on my profile page. To give it anything less than a 4 would
just, you got to give it a 5.
A 5 would just be beyond the pale. So, yeah, I got to give it a 5.
Do you guys know where this... Do you guys have Spielberg? I know Brendan has one. I don't know. Do you have all the Spielberg movies ranked somewhere?
No, I don't. I've never done that.
Okay. So I have it. I just pulled up my Spielberg list, and I have it number 5. And so I have Jaws number 1. Or, sorry, I have Jurassic Park number 1. Jaws number 2. E.T. number 3, Minority Report number 4, Raiders of the Lost Ark 5, and then Saving Private Ryan 6. So I'd just be curious where you guys have this ranked.
I do not have my list pulled up in front of me, but
probably around a similar place. Yeah, I would have E.T. higher. I would have Jurassic Park higher. I would have Jaws higher. It's right up there.
Just looking at my Spielberg list the other day. Yeah.
I feel like Minority Report is one that not as many people as me have ranked. No. I just think, like, for a futuristic sci-fi movie, I love Minority Report. It's so good.
Actually, Raiders is still currently sitting in my number 1 spot. Shocker. Raiders is number 1, followed by Jaws, Saving Private Ryan, Jurassic Park, E.T., and the surprise pick of the top 6, Catch Me If You Can.
I have that at my number 7. I like Catch Me If You Can.
I love Catch Me If You Can. It's just a fun movie. It's
very fun.
It's fantastic. Yeah, so we are... That is going to average us out to a 4.79.
Oh, nice.
Which we are going to bump up to a 5, I believe, right, guys?
That's 2 5s in a row.
Boom. Michael...
Yeah, we're on
classics for a reason sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, this movie is on the AFI list as well, just like Citizen Kane. It's not as high as Citizen Kane. I think this is
number 66.
66. Okay. Well, that's kind of low. So, all right. Well, you know, we're going to pick another classic for next week. We will find out next movie based on connections to Raiders of the Lost Ark. We have some listener suggestions that came in. We have our own suggestions. So, let's see what we're going to end up with. All right. Let's start with I'll start with Jeff. I always start with Jeff. So Jeff wrote in, he suggested movies about people, quote unquote, that are treasure hunters. And the 3 that he suggested were Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, which is a Coen Brothers movie. Mm-hmm. National Treasure, which is that movie about the Declaration of Independence starring Nicolas Cage. And
Fool's Gold.
About, except I remember it has Matthew McConaughey, but I don't remember much else about it.
It does sound right. Yeah, that's McConaughey movie.
Yeah. He also said he thought about suggesting Tomb Raider, but he didn't think that would stand a chance. And he wanted to mess with me by suggesting Romancing the Stone, which I did recently watch and was not nearly as good as Raiders of the Lost Ark. It is a not good ripoff of Raiders of the Lost Ark. So that's what we got from Jeff. From Jim Grumley, who we picked his suggestion this week, and he make it 2 in a row. He said he's sticking with a straight Harrison Ford in 1985's A Witness. It is Harrison Ford at the peak of his box office draw, trying to spread to do something different from Star Wars and Indiana Jones. He plays a policeman guarding an Amish boy who's witness to murder. Have you guys seen Witness?
Yeah.
Couple of times. I've not seen it.
I've never
fantastic,
seen it.
Fantastic Harrison Ford performance. I believe he was actually nominated for a Golden Globe and an Oscar for his performance in that movie, but did not win.
Oh. Well, speaking of Witness, Molly said she's going to stay in the 80s with Harrison Ford and Karen Allen. So she's where Harrison Ford is an undercover cop in Amish. So Molly and Jim are on the same page. She also suggests Starman, which stars Karen Allen and Jeff Bridges, but an alien takes the form of Karen Allen's dead husband and learns about human emotions, directed by John Carpenter. It's a sincere and lovely movie from 1984. I had not heard about Starman until a few months ago. I did not even know this movie existed.
I know I saw it when I was a kid, but I remember nothing about it, so it would be like a new watch for me.
Yeah.
To watch Starman.
It sounds like a Black Mirror, like, or a Twilight Zone, maybe. Maybe it's more of a Twilight Zone episode. All right, then Olin suggested from 1941, Casablanca, so we would stay on that AFI list. And he said, practically everything about the middle segment just after Jones arrives in Africa reminds him of Casablanca. Would summarize the primary link as the protagonist American in conflict with Nazis based on a multicultural African, North African market town. So I do think Casablanca was one of the movies that was referenced in that video that Jim sent us, especially considering the maps that are in Raiders of the Lost Ark.
The way they use the plane flying over a map is very similar to what they do for certain parts of Casablanca.
So that'll be three AFI movies in a row. That'd be something. Mm-hmm. All right. And then Mac.
He sent in Treasure of the Sierra Madre because it's a treasure hunt movie. Goldfinger because Indiana Jones is the American James Bond. And then another movie starring Harrison Ford in The Fugitive.
And he's on the run. All good suggestions from Mac. All right, so now we're going to move on to our host suggestions. I think I'm going to go first because I want to. So I'll go first. So I did have Treasure of the Sierra Madre on my list as well. I really started hearing more about this movie when Five Bloods came out, the Spike Lee movie, earlier this year. So a couple movies have... or a couple of podcasts have talked about this in relation, so I thought that might be a good chance to go back to that one. Under the connection of Nazis are bad, I wrote down Inglourious Bastards. Just thought in terms of a connection being that the Nazis are the villain in both movies. Nazis. Hot take, Nazis are bad. We don't like Nazis on this podcast.
No, thank you.
All right, then I have a couple more. Another one is a movie I've had on my watch list for a while. It is about a jungle... archaeology.
That is The Lost City of Z,
which I didn't think looked that good, but I know Mac really liked it. I've heard good things about it. So, and then the other, so I had a couple others written down that are also Rands that I'm not going to suggest. But the next one I'm going to suggest is also starring Harrison Ford. It is a Western, and it looks like none of us, well, I've seen it, but none of you have seen it, according to Letterboxd. And it is about a rabbi who is traveling across the United States to go to San Francisco, and it takes place in, he's traveling by train. It takes place in like the 1850s or so, and he meets a train robber played by Harrison Ford. The rabbi is played by Gene Wilder, and that movie is called The Frisco Kid. And I just remember watching this one a lot growing up because it was like Jewish representation on film. I was surprised Av had never seen it, at least had not logged it on Letterboxd.
So I've definitely seen part of it. So I guess I haven't logged it. I don't know if I ever saw the whole thing, but yeah, I definitely remember some of it. Yeah. He's like a rabbi. He's like going in like a stagecoach with a talus. I remember.
Yes. It's, I remember being very funny as a kid.
Yeah.
I have no idea if it still holds up, but, some of my also rans, Jumanji, The Next Level, I wrote down. It's actually written by Jake Kasdan. Ooh. So, yeah, throw Jumanji The Next Level on there as well.
Yeah. That's fine. We're not going to pick it.
But I also did have Superman written down, which I won't suggest. But one thing, and it points back to something about Raiders that I did want to point out, is that Indiana Jones really does have like two personalities, and it reminded me a lot of Clark Kent and Superman, where he's like glasses and he's cleaned up and he's not Indiana Jones. And then he's Professor Jones there. And then he's Indiana Jones when he's out and he's doing treasure hunting and he's like killing people and dirty.
He's Dr. Jones.
Yeah,
he did spend 6 years in archaeological doctor school for it to be called Mr. View.
I said professor, didn't I? I said Professor Jones.
Not the same as doctor.
That's true. Doctor.
So, all right.
Well, those were mine that I had written down. So, all right. Who wants to go next?
Who go next?
Yeah, I'll go next because I don't have a ton. A couple of mine have been taken up by the listeners or by Zach ahead of me. I have that's one. It's okay. I have one that's kind of an obvious connection just based on the Ark being supposed to be holding the Ten Commandments, which Moses brought down from the mountain. So I thought of naturally of the Charlton Heston version of the Ten Commandments.
All right, on my list.
Sorry, Al. And then because of Indiana Jones's fear of snakes, as well as his first encounter with a snake being on a plane, I, of course, naturally thought of Snakes on a Plane.
That's good.
And for my third pick, I wanted to pick Casablanca, but I can't. I mean, I could, but other people have already suggested it. And then I wouldn't be able to suggest it in the actual picking round. But I am going to, just because it is directly referenced in the cold open of this movie, and I know we're not going to pick it, but it is about a great American hero fighting Nazis. His name is Captain America. And this movie is canon in the Captain America First Avenger universe. So I'm going to pick Captain America the First Avenger.
All right. Well, I was going to have on my list Captain America Winter Soldier.
How is it canon? And is it because it's on Captain America's list in the Winter Soldier?
No, it's because in the beginning of Captain America, Red Skull is digging up the Infinity Stone, and he says Hitler is spending too much time digging for religious artifacts in Africa that don't mean anything.
Oh.
That's a direct reference to his hunt for the Ark in Raiders of the Lost.
Oh, that's fun.
Pretty cool. Yeah. All right, so I will. As I just said, I'm going to add in Captain America: The Winter Soldier. With we have Hydra, the secret Nazi organization, also searching for different.
The best MCU movie, by the way, the number one MCU movie.
It's definitely up there. My number two, which is all credit to my wife, who said, "Why don't we watch the other great, beloved 80s Steven Spielberg trilogy? And let's go start with the original Back to the Future."
Ooh.
This would be helpful because in the vein of allowing me to continue watching movie ladder movies with my kids.
Fair enough.
I have two more next to our movies I have not seen. Third is Three Kings, a movie about people searching for treasure in the Middle East. And my number four is The Big Chill, written and directed by Lawrence Kasdan, and apparently there's a scene where a character hums the theme song to Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Oh. I love The Big Chill. I'm a big fan of that movie.
I don't believe I've ever seen The Big Chill.
Oh. Have you never seen The Big Chill either?
I have not.
Okay. Good to know.
Interesting.
Right. The only problem with The Big Chill is they do watch you, because they're all U of M alumni, like University of Michigan alumni. And there's a scene where they're watching Jim Harbaugh play quarterback for Michigan, and it's terrible. It's the worst.
Glad that's the first place that your mind.
But otherwise, it's a good movie. Oh yeah, yeah. I remember when I watched that. I watched it right after Harbaugh got hired at Michigan, and they were watching at Harbaugh's quarterback, and I was like, "Are you serious?" I'm like, "What the hell? This is terrible." But yeah, don't worry. Rivalries never die.
I guess not.
All right. Av, you get to pick first since you went last.
Okay. I will go with the one a couple people suggested, Witness, some Harrison Ford movie I've never seen.
Can I get a witness? All right, Brendan.
I am going to go with the movie that I actually wanted to put on my list. It came up on Olin's list, and it actually came up last week as well. I've been wanting to rewatch Casablanca and have a reason to rewatch Casablanca for a really long time, and this would be really, really fun. And I think it's a movie you could even get the family to watch. I'm going to pick Casablanca.
I think it might be kind of slow for kids.
I think we would really enjoy it.
All right. Man, I just don't think I'm ready for Back to the Future yet.
I'm not either.
I definitely too tangential. It will come up, but I gotta really be on my A game. I gotta get a new computer and like upgrade my Wi-Fi before we start talking about Back to the Future. But your kids
only
are gonna
more future boy.
Yeah. But I will take. See, this sucks because I want to pick Treasure of the Sierra Madre, but
none of these are movies that I was gonna watch with his kids.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Yeah. All right.
It would be two Bogart films.
Yeah, but I can't pick Treasure of the Sierra. I think we have a constitutional crisis because I can't pick Treasure of the Sierra Madre because I also suggested it, and I'm not allowed to pick my own movie.
There you go.
Even though I like all my movies more than anybody else's this week, I really like every movie I suggested. I would watch any of those. All right. Anyways, I guess I am gonna pick The Big Chill because neither of you've seen it, and it's a good hangout movie. It's much different than what we've been watching. And I think there would be things to talk about. I think we would all like it, and we would just ignore that they're University of Michigan alumni.
Okay. Yeah, I'm fine with any of the three of these.
So, the only reason I don't want to pick Casablanca is because that would be three AFI movies in a row. And
that's fair.
Are we the Unspooled podcast? I don't think so. I don't think we can pick. I mean, we could. Casablanca is a great movie. I don't think you can go wrong with it. But and didn't Olin just have a movie picked also?
So.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm just trying to give back to the listeners a little bit here, buddy.
Who's seen Witness? Just Brendan?
Yeah.
I think we would
all enjoy Witness. Witness is a great movie.
Yeah. I mean,
both of them are streaming on Prime.
Okay. Witness and The Big Chill?
Yeah.
If I had to choose between the two, I would say that I want you guys to watch Witness and I would watch Witness. If that matters.
I mean, the fact that both Jim and Molly suggested Witness, I feel like we should lean that way because that appeases two listeners instead of one.
All right. Let's do it.
Jim, back-to-back movies for Jim getting picked. Look at you, Jim Crumley. All right. So Witness, we are watching next week. It is streaming on Amazon Prime, you said, Off?
Yeah.
Cool.
Jim wrote in. He said, can I get a Witness? And we said, yes, you can.
And so, yes, the connection is 1980s Harrison Ford not playing Han Solo, but playing somebody else. And so we'll be watching that and join us next week for that. Before we go, let's talk about the best thing we've been watching this week, really quickly diving into that. What's the best thing you watched in the last week? All right. Av's gone.
Good.
All right, we're leaving all this in. All right, Brendan, what's the best thing you watched in the last week?
Sorry, you were lagging out, and then all of a sudden you realized Dog wasn't there anymore, and then I lost it. Okay, sorry, I'm back.
Yes.
So, all right, so the best thing I watched this week is a little movie by director Kelly Reichardt that had a limited release at the beginning of the year, got bounced from theaters once the pandemic hit, and is now available to rent on streaming platforms. I rented it on Amazon Prime for a little over $5. It's called First Cow. It's a delightful movie about friendship. And actually, isn't too dissimilar from, some of the buddy adventure aspects of movies that we've talked about on the ladder itself, where these two unlikely friends basically go off on an adventure to, I don't really want to spoil the movie, but pull a heist, and certain things go wrong, and they have to try to figure out a way out of it, and they're very clever, and it's very fun, and it's all about their unlikely friendship, and whether that friendship will stand up to the heist being found out about, and it's very delightful. It's about 2 hours, it's on Amazon Prime as well as several other,
but you have to pay to rent it. It's not for free.
You have to pay to rent it on Amazon, as well as Fandango and a couple other platforms. I really enjoyed it. I'm a little annoyed that Letterboxd and IMDb have it listed as a 2019 film because it really feels like a 2020 film. And if it were listed as a 2020 film, it would be my number one movie of the year. But
yeah,
it's one of those gray area ones. Because its release, its actual theatrical release was in 2020, so it should be listed as a 2020 film. It's just not, and so I can't in good conscience put it as my number one movie of 2020, even though technically it is.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, but it's a like one. I highly recommend it.
It's on my list to watch for sure. So.
And then I also watched two Matthew McConaughey films the night before that I will not spend as much time talking about, but were both fun in their own way. The new Guy Ritchie film, The Gentleman, was very fun, reminded me a lot of Snatch. And The Lincoln Lawyer, the 2011 film with Matthew McConaughey playing a smooth operating lawyer, and which for some reason is really in his wheelhouse. He loves playing lawyers, and he's always really good at it. But that was actually also a really good film and had a lot of really interesting twists and turns that I didn't see coming. So yeah, would recommend both of those Matthew McConaughey films as well.
Nice.
What about you?
All right. So I actually didn't see that many movies this week. I had to watch Pacific Rim because I had it out from the library and movies back. So I had to watch it before this week. So Pacific Rim, always a classic. I was surprised to look on Letterboxd and see that people don't like Pacific Rim. I thought it was beloved. And apparently it's not as beloved as I thought. But outside of Charlie Hunnam, it's very good. What do you think of Pacific Rim?
I don't know that I ever saw it. So
you just, I swear you and I went to see
it. I think you made me start Pacific Rim and I never finished it.
Oh, it's a great.
I thought it was dumb and I walked out of the room.
Oh, no, it's not.
Listen to a podcast instead.
It's monsters versus robots, but it's like it's an action movie that you would think is based on IP, and it's actually like it is a unique story. You know, it's like you know original story. It is not based on any existing property, which is hard to find in a blockbuster these days. And yeah, definitely add Pacific Rim to your watch list.
You're making me add Pacific Rim to my watch list. All right, fine. It's done. Check later.
But the movie that I do want to talk about, which is one, actually, this was a suggestion from Brendan and Mac. I'm in a monthly movie challenge, and every month I have a different challenge that I have to meet for watching a certain type of movie. This month's challenge was to watch an international musical, and I could not think of any international musicals. I was like, all right, all the musicals, and it has to be something I haven't seen. And I was like, well, all the musicals that I can think of are American musicals. I just couldn't think of anything that was international, foreign movie.
So I asked my friends Mac and Brendan,
along with other lists of the best musicals, all suggested the French movie from 1964, The Umbrella of Cherbourg, and it was great. I loved it. It's awesome. It's streaming on Canopy and the Criterion Channel. The entire movie is done in like a sing-songy. It's not like, you know, loud, high energy musical. It's more just like instead of speaking to each other, they sing to each other, and it's very, it's a little bit to get used to. But it really what the movie is about or what it's like, what the mood of the movie is like, but it was much different than I was expecting, and I very much enjoyed it. And it's short, it's only 90 minutes. It is in French, so you do need to watch it with subtitles, but if you have Canopy or the Criterion Channel, I definitely recommend it. And it's just I hate using the word delightful, because I feel like too many people say delightful in terms of films now, and it's kind of obnoxious, but it really was a delightful movie.
A movie that makes you feel good watching it. I mean, that's fine. It's fine to use the word delightful. I like the word delightful.
Yeah.
Have
you seen this movie?
I have not, but you just made me add it to my watch list again, because I had it on there for a while because it kept coming up on the Film Spotting podcast, and then it dropped off because I was calling my list at a certain point, but now I've added it back on. So
yeah. I really want to talk about this movie.
Yeah.
I was really glad I knew nothing about it when I saw it. And so, like, I don't even want to say much more, but if you've seen this movie, I want to talk to you, so tweet at me. Yeah. Well, maybe I'll see First Cut this week, and then we can talk about it. And I guess that's as good of a place to close out as any others. If you've seen this movie, tweet at me. I'm at Brooks ZA, and let me know. I also wrote about it on Letterboxd. I wrote a little review, so you can see it on there. And it's The Umbrellas of Cherbourg is what it is called. Us talking about this, Av has already dropped off. Av has parental duties, which is partially why we're moving this section to the end, so that Av can pop off when he needs to and go be a dad. But you can follow Av at Asinensky on all platforms. On pretty good this week, they're doing a movie or an episode of Curb Enthusiasm that I just watched last night, and I don't remember the name of it, so I'm pulling it up right now. But I did really like this episode. It was my I gave it 5 pretties, which is their rating scale. It is called The Special Section. You can check that out. Av will be recording that probably. I think they record either Monday or Tuesday nights. So him and Alex Chester. All right. Where can people find you, Brendan?
You can find me on Twitter at Fidzy Brendan. You can find me on Letterboxd at BrenFids11. Other than that, not much else going on. Yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, what is going on is that we are watching Witness.
And it looks like it's streaming on HBO. I know Av said that it's streaming on Amazon.
I see. So check HBO. And it's for rental other places. It's from 1985. It stars Harrison Ford, which is our connection to Raiders of the Lost Ark. It is directed by Peter Weir. Ooh, he's directed a couple other movies that I like. So, yeah. And we'll be back to talk about Witness next week. Are you excited for Witness?
I'm very excited for Witness. It's a really good movie. I haven't rewatched it in a very long time. So I'll be interested to see how 80s it is or how it holds up. So, for sure.
Yeah. All right, and we'll see what we pick next week on the Movie Ladder Podcast. Of course, follow us at Ladder Movie. Send us your emails. And if your movie was selected, so Molly and Jim, send us a voicemail, themovieladder@gmail.com, and we'll play it next week as well. And let us know what you think. Otherwise, we'll see you next week when we talk about Witness.
Absolutely.